You're listening to HuntertonChamberRadio.com, sponsored by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. Our studios are located in the CenturyLink building at 14 Mine Street, Flemington, New Jersey. The content and views of our hosts do not necessarily reflect the views of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. To contact our station, call 908-782-7115 or email onair@hunterdon-chamber.org. Thank you to our sponsors and underwriters. Please remember to support them and buy Hunterdon, buy local. Visit www.hunterdonchamberradio.com for a complete listing of our programming.
Can you tell what my costume is? I'll give you a hint. Boo! Come to KFC for a $20 family fill-up, a perfect Halloween meal for a family of four, with 8 pieces of Kentucky Fried Chicken, 2 sides of taters, coleslaw, and 4 biscuits. Yep, that's right, I'm disguised as a singer. Pretty good costume, isn't it? KFC, it's finger-licking good.
Available for a limited time only. Pricing and participation may vary. Tax extra.
This is USA Headline News. I'm Melody Burkett. A trapped construction worker is freed from the scene of a partial ceiling collapse inside a Manhattan building under demolition. Fire Commissioner Daniel Nigro says it took 3 hours to free the worker who was trapped in the basement.
All during that time, rescue medics from the fire department and one of our doctors were able to insert 2 IVs in the victim, treat the victim with medication, and that victim was removed alive.
Nigro says the worker is in serious but stable condition. Another construction worker was killed when the ceiling gave way around 10:30 this morning. There were 19 people in the building at the time. The site was being cleared to make way for a 27-story high-tech boutique expected to open next year. The White House is confirming that a small number of U.S. Special Operations military forces will be deployed to Syria. Spokesman Josh Earnest told a briefing that they will act in an advisory role to moderate rebels who are battling ISIS. He says the numbers will initially involve less than 50 U.S. troops. You're listening to USA Radio News. I'm Melody Burkett.
Individuals and businesses with tax problems, listen carefully. If you owe over $10,000 in back taxes or have unfiled tax returns, U.S. Tax Shield can help you take back control. The IRS can seize your bank accounts, garnish your paycheck, close your business, and file criminal charges. Our team of tax attorneys can stop collections and get you protected. U.S. Tax Shield offers a price protection guaranteed quote to get you protected today. U.S. Tax Shield is A-plus rated with the BBB, so call 800-479-2697. U.S. Tax Shield, 800-479-2697.
During the Senate debate on the budget, Texas Senator Ted Cruz called out Senate and House leadership. Senior correspondent Jason Wirt has more.
Texas Senator Ted Cruz called out leadership in Congress during the debate about the budget, saying they were doing a disservice to disabled Americans by raiding the Social Security Trust Fund to keep those people on the government dole.
A great many people with disabilities are capable of meaningful work. Reforming that program to help people work to provide for their families, that makes a difference in people's lives. But Mr. President, that isn't easy. That's hard work. That's actually what we were elected to do. Far easier just to go raid the Social Security Trust Fund.
Cruz said Republicans were basically capitulating to everything President Obama wants. I'm Jason Wirt.
Hillary Clinton is increasing her lead as the Democratic presidential field shrinks. A new NBC News poll taken after Joe Biden formally stepped aside gives Clinton 50% support among Democrats likely to vote. That's the highest it's been since polling on the primary race began in April. The Justice Department begins releasing thousands of federal prison inmates today. More than 6,000 drug offenders are eligible for early release under the U.S. Sentencing Commission's new guidelines. It's the largest one-time release of federal prisoners in the nation's history. Target says it's dropping shipping fees for all online orders during the holiday shopping season. Free shipping will be available for online orders from November 1st to December 25th. It's the second year in a row that the discount retailer is making the offer as competition heats up with rivals Walmart and Amazon. You're listening to USA Radio News. I'm Melody Burkett.
Well, that's our news. Good afternoon. It's 5 o'clock somewhere, and that somewhere is right here. Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce Internet Radio. I'm Bill Wolfson, and I'm one of the sports guys. We're waiting for Pat Smith to come back from her break. But let me give you the weather. It's gorgeous out there, folks. 60 degrees right now here in beautiful downtown Flemington. It is clear, sunny, cool, everything a fall day should be, even some leaves which have fallen down and we can shuffle around in. So tonight it's going to be mostly clear, drop down to 33. Saturday will be gorgeous again with a high of 57. I'm heading to the shore so I can do what I need to do for my boat to get it ready to close it up for the winter. Saturday night will be mostly cloudy with a low of 41. And Sunday, another high of 64, 30% chance of scattered showers, and Sunday night, maybe 20% chance of slight rain. So we've got a lot of stuff to talk about today. You should know, folks, Monday might be slightly rainy, so much for that on a blue Monday. Tuesday, sunny. Wednesday, sunny. Thursday, sunny. And then it starts to cloud up again for the weekend. So, folks, why not just forget about working next week? Tell your boss I said you could take off because the weather's going to be just great. And now we've got Pat back along with John Manfreda, who wants to brag, I'm sure, about his New Jersey Devils beating my Philadelphia Flyers 4-1 last night. The Flyers return to their old tricks. They can't beat a bad team, but they can beat a good team.
Bill, Pat, good afternoon. Live from the studios of the Huntington County Chamber of Commerce and broadcast across the country via the internet. It's the Sports Guys. And Bill, yes, I was going to introduce some Devils talk into the program before we get into the baseball and the football, which I'm sure will occupy a substantial part of the show. But today I had the pleasure and the honor of attending the Somerset County Business Partnership Salute to Tourism at Neshannock Valley Golf Club, where the special guest of honor was Hugh Weber, the president of the New Jersey Devils and Prudential Center, who received the award for tourism. Salute to tourism, basically, is what it is. And did you know that Somerset County had approximately $1.1 billion in their tourist revenue last year?
What?
Isn't that incredible?
From what?
Well,
what are they going
well,
to see?
Well, when you add in a lot of the special events that they have, the historic courthouse, the car shows, the fairs that they have, the medieval times fair that they have, all of these events, they have Duke Farms, all of these places that people go to see, it winds up being a – now, obviously, these are estimates, but they came up with $1.1 billion and based that on some type of quantification that the Somerset County Chamber of Commerce and Business Partnership has access to.
Well, I assume they talk about the Patriots in that, but frankly,
yes, the Somerset Patriots.
$1.1 billion, you know, I would think actually Huntington County, maybe I just because I live here, but there just seems to be more here, unless they're talking about events at some of the bigger hotels in Somerset County.
No, I think, Pat, the two things. Huntington County, there's more to do recreationally.
Right.
Okay? That's not going to draw as many tourists. That will draw sports fans and people like to boat and things like that because the reservoir.
People who are here to take advantage of it, and they moved
hiking,
out here to take advantage of
and
it.
They moved out here to be – that's exactly right, Bill. But Somerset, yeah, you have a couple of big hotels. You have the Palace at Somerset Hills. You've really got a lot of big venues. But anyway, they sponsored this business luncheon and decided to give their award to Hugh Weber of the Devils. And Weber gave a tremendous presentation, including several video clips of the Prudential Center, the team, the things that they're doing. And, you know, from a sports perspective, it's really very interesting. They're talking about branding. And what they finally realized under the new ownership that took over the team a couple years ago was that although the previous 30 years were marked primarily by excellence on the ice, they failed in their mission off the ice to establish a branding and a to become part of the footprint, so to speak, of Central New Jersey.
Well, the New Jersey Devils have always been criticized for that in the NHL. When you go to the read some of the hockey publications, some of the hockey trade publications, even the Toronto Globe and Mail talked about how teams succeed when they establish a footprint throughout a community, and the New Jersey Devils really have not been able to do that. What that means is there's a lot of hard work involved. You've got to start sending the guys who are your radio announcers with a player, maybe to a Lions Club meeting or to...
Well, Bill, maybe I get this message out and talk about what he talked about.
Kindergarten class. We'll go right ahead. They don't get the message out the way they should, but go ahead, John.
Well, what you're saying, first of all, is substantially correct. What they realized is that, you know, they were able to attract some big sponsors. So somebody like Ford or the big car dealership that they have would pay them a bunch of money and become a big sponsor. What they realized was that they never included as a condition of the sponsorship that they brand the Devils as well. So they're now requiring of their sponsors, you know, the official car of the Devils, have the Devils logo around, the NHL logo around, okay? This is partnering with the NHL. There's a lot of teams, Bill, that, you know, aren't 75 years old and haven't won 10 cups and don't have that kind of following. I mean, the Rangers deserve an award for ineptitude. I mean, they've had one cup in 76 years. I mean, they're almost as bad as the Red Sox were in baseball or the Cubs are. But the point is, they have that tradition. They were the only game in town in those years. So that is carried over. These newer teams, I mean, look at the Columbus Blue Jackets. I'll bet if you polled 100 people in the street and said, who are the Columbus Blue Jackets, or just who are the Blue Jackets, I'll bet 75 to 85% wouldn't even know who that team is, all right? Or how about the Clippers? Or how about, you know, some of these teams that have moved a lot and that kind of thing? So what the Devils and a lot of other teams are doing is what, for example, the Flyers have done extremely successfully, and that is, as you put it, Bill, become part of the footprint in the community. So it was a wonderful presentation, and they stressed exactly what you were saying, which is they have to get out in the community. Every single person in management on the Devils has to have their own marketing plan, their own plan to go out into the community to do public service and take the logo along with it. So between 100 or so people doing that and this reciprocity they're requiring with the sponsors, they are going to get the logo out there quite a bit more.
Well, that's a very critical thing, John, because one of the problems that the Trenton Titans had was that they didn't think Hunterdon or Somerset County existed.
They should have marketed here.
They never marketed here. I invited them on the show a couple of times. I also invited them to a number of events that I had been involved in at a couple of area rinks. And they showed absolutely no interest. Consequently, you now have an empty arena and a team.
Bill, was there something endemic to hockey, the hockey industry, that sort of, you know, discourages or has a chilling effect on the desire to establish the footprint in market?
Well, the chilling effect probably starts on the ice.
No, but you know what? Let me say something else. First of all, what they need to do, I mean, it's a great stadium. It's easy to get to. But remember, it's in Newark. So they need to go out and they need to show people, number one, how easy it's to get to. If I, off the top of my head, I remember when I went to a game in San Francisco, football obviously, but the buses that came in from the outlying towns that, you know, they were obviously the party buses, but they came in regularly. I don't know. You go to Devils games. Do you see that? I mean, could we get on a bus in Somerville? Could we get on a bus in Flemington?
No, they don't have anything like
that's
that. But the mass transit now does go into Newark.
I'm really talking about what are they going out
to target fans, you mean?
To target, to target people who are not diehard fans. To target the people who said, hey, wait a minute. My church group is going in. My this is going in.
And have a bus leave from Bridgewater Commons.
Absolutely. Or have a bridge, you know, a bus not every game, but from Flemington. And, of course, the other thing, And I'm sorry. I realize that football is expensive. It's expensive to go to football games. But there's so many games. And frankly, it's very expensive. I mean, I think the way that kids become fans is by their parents taking them to games when they're young. And we've gone to a Devils game. And frankly, you know, there aren't a lot of people who can afford
it's a little pricey.
Go to those
they
games.
Do have a lot of kids' nights, family nights, dollar hot dog nights. They do have that. But Pat, I think you have a very good idea there with the idea of having maybe two buses leaving Bridgewater. I mean, heck, that could bring 100 people into the arena from this area. Those types of promotions would certainly be helpful. But let me address your point about Newark, which Bill and I have discussed numerous times, and which Hugh Weber talked about today. He said the zoning approvals, the land use approvals, have finally been completed. The money, the funding is there. And he said within the next 24 months, you will see that entire area surrounding the Prudential Center under construction. The big hotel right in front of the Prudential Center, opposite Broad Street, which is right now just a big parking lot. Several of the parking lots around the arena are going to be built on, and they've been working. Unfortunately, that stuff was promised 5 years ago. You know, they opened the arena in 2007, and they said, oh, by 2010, 2012, there'll be a hotel, there'll be built, and it didn't happen. Now, part of the reason it happened was the Newark Council wanted a big chunk of it. They wanted money out of the deal. You know, money's the root of all evil, as they say. And that was financial disputes between the Sports and Exhibition Authority, the Devils, and Newark really completely shut down those building plans.
There was a huge fight over parking revenue.
Huge. There was a $2 million fight where the town wanted the Devils to kick in another $2 million. The Devils said, but you're just wrong about this. And the town thought they could blackmail the Devils. The Devils didn't back down, took them to court, wound up winning the case, went to the appellate division, won again. And, Newark, the smartest thing they could do is to play ball.
Absolutely.
Okay? With the industry that wants to bring sports teams there, build buildings. Hey, do you think it's a... do you wonder why the Nets went to Brooklyn? They had a brand new arena there.
Not only did they have a brand new arena.
They went to Brooklyn and they built a new arena just to get away from these buffoons in Newark.
Did they get a brand new arena, but they got a brand new arena above a rail yard. Being on a railhead means you get on the train 50 miles away, 30 miles away. You get off the train, you walk onto the platform, you take the escalator.
It's exactly like Boston Garden.
Madison Square Garden does that.
Boston Garden does the same thing.
Except I don't think that's a valid criticism because the train station, Penn Station, is so close.
Oh, it is. There are several thousand fans Mass Transit to get to Newark Arena. But, you know, a lot of them at night are concerned. They're walking out at 10 o'clock at night. They're in downtown Newark, and a lot of them are concerned about it.
Well, that's why you have an extension of the gateway with the covered walkways into the arcades. You keep the stores open.
Right.
And you have a couple of restaurants and a couple of bars so somebody can get a snack or take their date there after the game.
Unfortunately, they had some of that, but as you know, Bill, and we just commented when we were going to a game 2 weeks ago, they've closed a lot of that stuff up.
Unfortunately, that's the case because, remember, you can't open a business just when it's hockey night.
Right.
Because the rents are just too high to sustain that. Right. So you've got to find entrepreneurs who are willing to create something which is sports-oriented or which will be attractive to somebody who can afford to go out and spend $200 for tickets and another $50 for food and snacks and still be able to buy something on the way out the door, plus the railroad tickets, because let's face it, all of the four pro sports leagues are expensive. That's one of the reasons why you're seeing a lot of minor leagues thrive, because it's inexpensive fun. And why you've seen a lot of college football thrive, because, again, an inexpensive Saturday afternoon.
No question.
Sunshine.
No question about it. And, you know, the impact, one of the reasons Somerset County Business Partnership gave this award is because part of the business plan is to reach out to Somerset, Hunterdon, okay, Middlesex, and some other counties. Now, they stop short of Mercer because a good part of Mercer is Philadelphia-oriented. But they love Somerset County, Hunterdon County. They love this area. They intend to market out here. The idea of the bus transit is great, Pat, that things like that. But they want to get out into the community, bring players out, bring NJ Devil mascot out, which they do now. NJ Devil has been to the middle school in Reddington several times. So the Devils want to market out here. Teams like the Yankees don't have to do that. The football teams and so forth don't do things like that. They go to the hospitals. You see players visiting sick children and things like that. But I think for hockey, at least for the time being, they've got to establish that footprint. And economically, it affects all of us.
Well, remember something, too. If you look at the demographics and you look at the statistics that you get regarding income, Hunterdon and Somerset are
fourth
one of the
largest,
wealthiest counties in the
even
country.
If you expand the footprint, Bill, because they did talk about that, and they said Somerset, Hunterdon, and then if you extend it, you know, Union and a little further to Morris, it's actually, and into Newark, it's the fourth best sports venue in the country in terms of income level, education, and people who are enjoying sports.
Yeah, but you don't need income. I mean, one of the things, and I know I always talk about the Packers, but the Packers really do things to reach out to the community, and they don't have to. You know, they're sold out. Their tickets are sold out forever. But they will have special times where, you know, I think they had something recently with $13 tickets. And, you know, they will fill the stadium. They bring people in. They have things for the kids where they have, you know, a kid has a bike that one of the players rides. I mean, it is such a total involvement in the community. Now, granted, it's a small community. I understand that. But the Packers, from the time I was a kid, always had a lot of things going for the community. And I think that is really something that,
Again, you have a tradition there.
Didn't think they had to do.
Exactly.
It is a tradition, but Green Bay has always taken the long view. They're just not selling you tickets for the 2016 season now. They're selling you tickets for the 2036 season. Why?
Because can't even get tickets for the 2036 season.
Well, let me make my point. Not only are you getting tickets, but forget about the tickets for a moment. You're getting the eyeballs watching them on TV. A huge source of pro team revenue is the big glass eye of a television camera. And remember, cable TV is hungry for content. With cable now fragmented over the internet, you now have tremendous opportunities for sports leagues to create their own networks, keep that revenue. And the way they drive that revenue is by the demographics. The more eyeballs watching the Packers on a Sunday, even if those eyeballs happen to be in Moscow in the Soviet Union, where they probably don't even know what a Green Bay Packer is. If they start to watch that, that's extra revenue because everybody who is tuned in at that time or is on the internet at that time is registering somewhere on some device accounting, and therefore that drives advertising revenue.
You mentioned something interesting, which really just occurred to me. You know, if you go back in the day, if you look at the teams, like they were talking about the Rangers today, and say, look, we're not trying to compete with the Rangers because they have a tradition that goes back, you know, generations and so forth. And it occurred to me that the teams that have come lately, okay, have had more trouble establishing themselves because there's so much competition. You know, when the Rangers were the only hockey team within 500 miles, you know, up, you know, 30, 40, 50 years ago, that was it. you know, and same thing. You had a team up in Boston, then New York. Where was the next closest team? Chicago. You know, I think that one of the problems that sports teams have these days is there is so much competition, and you can watch this stuff over the internet many times for free.
Yeah, but you know, one of the things that I think you're forgetting, and that is, as kids, we grew up, if it was baseball, you know, and I was a little kid, it was the Milwaukee Braves. Those guys all stayed with the team. The football teams, I mean, I could name you everyone on the old teams. They didn't go to a Super Bowl and then leave the next year. So kids who become really interested in a player, you know, that I think has changed. And
I agree. That's a big piece of it.
I think it is. Now, maybe I'm wrong, but I think it's much easier for especially little kids. I can't tell you the number of people that I would not think were Green Bay Packer fans, but when they were little, they saw this Brett Favre, and he was somebody that they followed. And, you know, other people. I mean, look at what happened to all of the Philadelphia fans when Reggie went to Green Bay. You know, I mean, and he had been there for a long time, but I think it's just a little more difficult to have that kind of team loyalty because the players move around so much.
Well, that's
and
very,
I'm sure
that's
that hockey
true.
Is the same way.
That's very true. Hockey is a very funny sport that way. Remember that there's a different culture north of our border with Canada, and so you have a national television program, Hockey Night in Canada, where it's not just the NHL games, but...
That's a cultural event.
It's a cultural event.
It is.
But it is. But you also have... what they call the hockey cake competitions. You get these hockey moms who bake these sheet cakes that look like the rink, and then they make players out of, I guess, marzipan or whatever it is, and they dye them to look like their son's team or the team their son is and the team their son is playing against, and they'll have like a little black licorice drop for a puck. And they have competitions, and you get a wild and crazy character like a Don Cherry who gives a prize out for this at the end of the season. So you may have some nice hockey mom in Halifax, Nova Scotia, who gets to take her entire family to the Stanley Cup Finals because they won this prize, and the league makes a big deal out of it. Is this known south of the border? No. A hockey cake? That's crazy.
Well, actually, though, if you ever saw halftime in Green Bay, which they don't show on television, if you saw some of their halftime shows, you know, believe me, it would not go over in New York. But in any event, let's take a short break and hear from some of our sponsors.
And by the way, if you're all out there wondering what happened to Ken Milstree, he is at the Phantoms game tonight.
Up
with
in
his
Allentown.
Wife. Yeah, so that's why he is not here, but he's engaging in sports activities.
Well,
so go ahead, Pat.
So he's allowed.
That's
great.
Well, you know what? I thought he wasn't showing up because of what's happened, and we'll talk about it after these spots.
We'll come back and go to baseball.
I thought he was afraid to show up to face the two of you in light of what's happened to his Mets. So we'll be back shortly.
At Crown Trophy of Flemington, we have thousands of products for you to choose from. Whether you're looking for trophies, plaques, or corporate awards, Crown Trophy of Flemington is your one-stop shop. We feature acrylic and crystal awards and promotional products for any occasion. We build and engrave all awards right on site, and we're a leading supplier of varsity jackets for local sports teams. We provide quality customer service and great pricing. Crown Trophy of Flemington is conveniently located in the Staples Shopping Center in Flemington. Crown Trophy of Flemington, we're trophies and a whole lot more.
Don't fear technology. Use it, understand it, and embrace it. The mission of Tech Today is to demystify technology. I'm your host, Chris Bianco, principal of Blue Panther Business Partners. Every Tuesday morning from 10 to 11, we will cover new apps, buying advice, technology news, and answer your questions. Good day, and join me on Tech Today on HuntertonChamberRadio.com.
This is Jeannie Aversa, CRPC, financial advisor at Patton Hiding Associates. Do you have questions about your retirement, like will your money last throughout your lifetime? Will you have enough to live the life you want? And when will you be able to retire? If so, you're not alone. As a financial advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., Patton Heide & Associates can help you find the answers with the exclusive Confident Retirement Approach. We'll work with you one-to-one to understand your goals and discuss the four key areas of retirement, including covering your essentials, lifestyle, protection, and legacy needs. From there, we'll work together to develop a retirement roadmap with clear steps you can take to help you retire on your terms. Call Patton Heide & Associates today at 908-713-6600. Office is located at 1318 Route 31 North, Annandale, New Jersey. The Confident Retirement Approach is not a guarantee of future financial results. Investment advisory products and services are made available through Ameriprise Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor.
I'm Andy Ross. I'm a CPA with the accounting firm of Bedard Corky & Company, and I joined the Chamber to interact with new Chamber members and expand our mutual needs for business networking and giving back to the Hunterdon business community.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce. Building business. One business at a time.
Good evening. Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weichert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 in Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
Hey, this is Big C of Good Morning Hunterdon on HuntingChamberRadio.com. Like what you hear on Hunterdon Chamber Radio? Now you can take it with you. Download our Hunterdon Chamber Radio app from iTunes and Google Play Store now. Get schedules, station information, listen live, or to the latest podcasts. Everything in the palm of your hand or in your car during your commute. Get the HuntingChamberRadio.com app today.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HuntingChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Hi, I'm Pat Smits, Law Offices of Patricia Garrity Smits, LLC. The Hunterdon Chamber is a great resource to find the best local business people and meet new friends.
Hunterdon Chamber of Commerce, building business, one business at a time.
Okay, sports guys, we're back. Are we going to talk about Ken because he's not here? Because I think he's not here because of he doesn't want to face us or doesn't want to face the two of you because of his poor Mets performances.
Well, you know, Pat, I think he may have overslept the other morning because it took Kansas City, 14 innings until about 2 a.m. to beat the New York Mets 4-3.
I don't know about you. I faded before the end. I mean,
oh, me too.
I got to watch the highlights
and put it on Mets Fast Forward. But, you know, it was interesting the way Kansas City won. They manufacture runs when they can't score runs any other way. And they won the game on a sacrifice fly with one out. A guy scored from third. And it's very interesting to watch these two teams. Now, granted, Kansas City's been there before. They've got the experience of playing in a World Series, whereas the Mets don't yet. This is their first time around. And the Mets are an excellent team. Don't take that. Take nothing away from them. But where the Mets have it over Kansas City, I think, is in the starting pitching. The relief pitching Kansas City has, I think, is marginally better. But Kansas City manufactures runs. They do not rely on home runs. They do not rely on the long ball. They recognize that they are not the 1962 Yankees and that they can just get a three-run home run and that wins a game for them. But they find ways to score runs. The other thing is Kansas City fields wonderfully. It's not that they're committing errors. Yeah, they have their that error here or there.
Yeah, but there were some errors covering that I so saw much that more I was field. Surprised about. I mean, there were some errors out there in the Mets part that I was really surprised about. And you know me, I don't ordinarily watch.
Travis O'Nodd's miscue and a couple of passed balls. Yeah. Those are problems for the Mets. But, you know, that's baseball. That's why you play the game, because those things are going to happen. And I'm not particularly tied to either team. I'm hoping the Mets will find a way to win the World Series because I'm a New York sports fan. But I can also tell you that Kansas City looks like the more complete team. And remember also, Kansas City was running away with things throughout the season, whereas the Mets only got hot at the trade deadline, and their pickup of Yanis Cespedes, who I think was a wonderful acquisition for them.
But again, that goes to Pat's point. Cespedes will likely be a rental. He wants a $100 million 6-year contract that, you know, he'd be a fool not to. He's right. He's 26, 27, right at the peak. He's had a great year. He immediately elevated the Mets into contention with that bat. I don't know that the Mets can or would be willing to pay him that kind of money, and he may very well be gone. So he would have played for the team for 4 months.
Well, that may very well be.
How do the fans bond with that?
Right.
But remember, though, that the Mets have shown that they've got a core of good young players, particularly
pitchers primarily.
You've got Wilmer Flores, who's actually turned into a real shortstop instead of a crybaby. You've got a couple of guys in the outfield who can catch the ball and have excellent arms. And take a look at Travis O'Nodd. Although he had a couple of errors and a couple of passed balls, he's learning how to handle pitchers, especially relief pitchers, and I think he's going to mature into a decent catcher.
Well, Bill, let me ask you something, because you know me. I'm really not a baseball fan, but it seemed to me that in looking at the Mets pitchers, there were a lot of good fastballs, but the Royals seem to be fastball hitters.
They are.
I mean, it
there was a stat they had, Pat, to your point, that there were 30-something, maybe 34 comes to mind, two strike pitches made by Mets pitchers in the first two games, none of them resulted in a swinging miss strike three.
Right.
They made contact on every two strike pitch.
Well, how many, since you're following the statistics, it didn't seem to me, and I didn't watch the entire games, I watched quite a bit, but it didn't seem to me that, you know, three strikes and out. I mean, it just didn't seem to
Well, the Royals remind you of the 2013 Red Sox. They wear you down. They take pitchers. Right. They foul off pitchers. The average at bat is 8 to 9 pitches, and that's what they do. And the problem, I think, with the Mets thought they would go into this series with three flamethrowers and just blow the ball by everybody. But you got to remember, these are young pitchers. They've never been in this position, and they've never pitched this long. They're normally, you know, long gone by now.
Well, remember something, too. The Royals are working them deep into pitch counts. The Royals are playing almost a classic game the way it is supposed to be played if you're a baseball purist, which I'm certainly not, because I do like the designated hitter. The other thing that the Royals are doing by working young pitchers deep into the count is they reach that 90 to 105 pitch count by about the fifth inning instead of the seventh inning. And now you've got a less than perfect Mets bullpen, and they're jumping on the bullpen. So you've got the problem also of a fastball pitcher, relatively young, who can throw the ball 100 miles an hour. He could throw the ball through a brick wall if he wanted to. But remember, the Royals are excellent fastball hitters. Manage, as I've said before, they manage to lay off the stuff that's out of the strike zone. They've got a very good sense of where it is. I think a lot of the reasons the Royals have won in the first two games is that they have excellent hitting coaches who've gotten the messages across to their players.
It's more than that, Bill. The Royals, over the last four seasons, lead the major leagues in contact swings.
Well, that's exactly really? My point. It's the hitting coach.
Wow. Over the last
four
years.
4 years.
4 years. This isn't this postseason, yeah. Okay. Oh, how are we going to beat the Mets? This team is constructed to, you know, to hit the ball, to make contact. The Mets pitchers want to blow people away with strikeouts. Now, number one, those pitchers are now got a lot of miles on them going into these games now, going through the third round of the playoffs. And it's colder. And, again, these are young guys going against experienced seasoned hitters who love to foul off pitches, and they can't pitch to contact because eventually those swings are going to produce hits and runs. So I think the major concern is that they're not getting the strikeouts that they normally get against right. most teams, so it's a bad matchup. The strength of the Mets going into this series, because the position players favor the Royals, I don't want to say substantially, but there's a clear advantage with Kansas City at the other eight positions if you added them all up, okay? But the Mets going in the series had what they believed was a significant advantage in starting pitching. What the Royals have been able to do because of the way they bat is to neutralize that advantage.
You think the Mets are overconfident because they went through the Cubs like a buzzsaw?
Well, you know, they shouldn't have been. The Dodgers are a bad baseball team. The Cubs are not a good baseball team, okay? You had two or three clubs in the American League that were significantly better than the. I mean, it was the Dodgers didn't win the West. The Giants lost it. Everybody else lost it to them. They're just not a good team. Wasn't surprised that Mattingly got canned. They're just not a good team. Bill, there may be something to that, and that's one of the reasons that I don't like the Mets and these pitchers in particular, because I felt they were condescending, overconfident, young, snot-nosed kids who are now getting...
John, what do you really think?
I don't like them.
Okay, you don't
the
like
long
them, huh?
hair, the glaring looks, the nose in the air,
well,
the aloof...
Well, John, they're playing in New York, the media capital of the world, whereas... Kansas City, the Midwest, where everybody has to be nice to everybody else. It's just like in Toronto. It's like they always used to say, the Toronto Maple Leafs were built to sell out every game, get as many eyeballs as they can watching...
play for ties on the road.
Play for ties on the road, and they were built to lose games at home by one goal. So that they would... have fans who would follow them on the road, hoping that they would somehow eke their way into the playoffs.
Somehow I'm not connecting the dots here. I've lost my point there. But the point is, and the expectation is Syndergaard will come out tonight and light them up, okay? If he doesn't, it's over. Let's face it. I think the Royals, they've seen film. They've seen this kid pitch. I mean, they're going to be looking to employ that same methodology, which is to get a piece of the ball and then work to deep counts, as you said, Bill. And then as the game moves on, try to string some hits together. They are not – look, the Mets got some big homers out of Murphy and Duda. I mean, you know, when that –
no question about that, but remember, you know, something. Met pitchers who want to just try to paint the corners – of a strike zone.
But they don't do that. They're not built to do that, Bill.
I hope they get lucky
But they're not built to do that.
Pitchers. You got to wait for their relief pitcher to do that. These guys want to throw it right down the middle.
The starters are not Rembrandts, no.
They want to throw it right down the middle. And remember,
they want to throw it down the middle and say, I'll bet you can't hit it.
Yeah, as far as the Royals are concerned, that's batting practice.
That's batting practice. That's correct.
So that's what we've got. Meanwhile, we've got 15 minutes left to go. So how about them Owls? I heard they sold out against Notre Dame, and I heard even His Holiness the Pope couldn't get a ticket.
Well, I think it should be a competitive game. There are two athletes on the Notre Dame team that Temple has never seen the likes of before because they don't play in that elite division. But I think for Temple, the key will be not to get behind, so you have to throw the ball, and then Notre Dame can bring people, and then it just unravels. I think if they play a conservative game, get their ground attack going, short passes, don't turn the ball over, they can at least stay in the game. The key for Temple is to be relevant, stay in the game into the second half, and then you never know. A Notre Dame turnover, you know, I mean, they're no great offensive juggernaut either.
Well, remember something. Temple having won seven games now, is it? Nine games, excuse me. Is it seven?
Seven.
Seven games, pardon me. Temple having won seven games has been the beneficiary of only nine touchdown passes. That should tell you a lot. As much as I would like to see the Owls become an offensive juggernaut, their real strength lies in their defense. Notre Dame is going to have some real problems solving the way Temple covers those gaps.
I think what it really comes down to, Bill, is the ground game. If Temple can run the ball and chew up the clock, they will put ND in a position where they got to take chances. You're right that obviously the Temple defense has to step up. But if Temple runs the ball, like most football games, right, Pat? If you run the ball, you have a good chance to win.
Yep. And, I'm interested in seeing, of course, my Packers are playing Denver.
That's both a big game. What's your two undefeated teams,
Pat?
Well,
two undefeated. Yeah. Carolina's also undefeated. I mean,
these two are undefeated going head-to-head.
Yeah, well,
Green Bay and Denver. What's your take on that game?
Green Bay, Denver going head-to-head, and then Green Bay has to go to Carolina.
Well, let's first go
All
through
right.
Denver.
Well,
what do you think? I think Peyton Manning's a hurting dude. I honestly think the Packers win this.
I do too.
Pretty easily, and not going away. But
nobody wins in Denver easily because no one is used to that altitude.
There's
a big
advantage.
There's a bigger advantage for Denver playing at home, I think, than any other team. I mean, you can talk about Minnesota and crowd noise. You can
Buffalo.
Talk about the Packers and the loyal fans. But Denver has that built in, and remember, at this time of year, these guys, even in the rookies, they've been playing in that altitude, you know, since August. So I think the Packers will still pull it out. But I think it's interesting that we have my poor team, you know, has to go against two other, at least at this point, undefeated teams. And, we shall see. Now, one of the things that nobody's talked about is I think you guys should all be telling me I was right when I said I could not understand how Rutgers and Maryland got into the Big Ten. I mean, you had to feel sorry for Rutgers when they paid Ohio State.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like kindergartners playing with high schoolers.
Yeah. They were out of their way. They were never in that game.
I don't understand, to be honest with you, why the Big Ten would want such an uncompetitive matchup.
I think they want the New Jersey market.
Yeah, but you know something? They want the New Jersey market, and certainly they
going to watch
want Rutgers
it?
To become a Big Ten powerhouse. But I always think of the Big Ten as a Midwest.
Yes.
It has been traditionally all Big Ten land-grant schools, except I think Northwestern is not a land-grant. But you're right. It was a surprise when Penn State went in. But that at least made a little more sense. You had to feel sorry for Rutgers. And frankly, do you really think people watch those games? I mean, unless they're a real
It did
loyal
more damage
Rutgers,
to Rutgers' reputation than anything.
I thought so, too. The thing that I was very surprised about is that people watch that game nationally because they want to see Ohio State beat up on a weak team.
I don't think so. I think you turned it off. I mean, it was...
I agree.
To watch the game,
I agree.
And I was not going to waste my time.
Yeah. The second half was not worth watching. Yeah,
it but really remember, wasn't. People tuned in the beginning. They made it a point of wanting to plan to watch that game because they thought Rutgers might give Ohio State a game just on an off chance. So they watched the first quarter, and then they moved on, I think.
But that's the point. I mean, look, Ohio State has always been a tough team in the Big Ten. You know, tough team for Wisconsin, tough team for any one of them. But it just never made sense, as you guys know. It never made sense to me that Maryland and, you know, Rutgers went into the Big Ten.
But, you know, it depends. A lot of people said that when Boston College joined the ACC, and that's worked out pretty well for them. I think the problem with Rutgers is to some extent politics. They don't get the right coaches. You need the coaches to get the kids.
Well, that's true. That's absolutely true. But on the other hand, you get, and I'm not saying Ohio State, but I know that Wisconsin, if you look at their team, they're mostly from Wisconsin.
That happens to
you
be
know?
True.
And yes. they're not doing a lot of recruiting other places. And, of course, the other thing, it's a very tough school to get through. And, you know, that does create some problems because often their football players have to go somewhere else for a year to get their grades up. But you would think that Rutgers would have a real advantage from the standpoint of recruiting because of the number of schools. Remember, New Jersey has a lot of good high school football teams. I mean, really,
it's the third most talent in the country behind California and Texas and Florida.
Absolutely.
Maybe the fourth.
In fact,
maybe
Pat,
the fourth.
Let me remind you that 100 and Central graduate Matt Ioannidis is a defensive linebacker for Temple. He grew up in Ringo's, and he's a senior this year. He wears number 9. And, you know, Temple's defensive linemen and defensive linebackers are going to be really part of it. He's one of the keys to this game.
Yeah, but why would that be surprising? A kid from Ringo's, New Jersey going
to
Temple.
Philadelphia. That's my whole point. Temple has focused on recruiting more within
locally.
100 to a 200-mile radius than they had in the past, whereas before they just wanted guys that were local to the Philadelphia area because it was Big Five. Basketball and football was not considered to be the engine that pulled the train in the athletic department.
And that's the whole point, Bill. To answer your question, Pat, why did Maryland and Rutgers do it? Because it's a money-making program. You get into the Big Ten, you can increase your prices, etc. Rutgers made a ton of money last Saturday night while they were getting destroyed by Ohio State.
Yeah, but why did the Big Ten allow it? I understand why Rutgers and Maryland wanted to go into the Big Ten, but I still don't understand.
Leagues.
What other entree does the Big Ten have into the New York sports market?
They're trying to get into the New York, New Jersey
care?
Market.
I mean, you know, the fact
because it's money. They can market. They can sell T-shirts and sweatshirts and hats. And they want to expand their footprint.
Not only that, it is the ability to say to your advertisers, when you know, 2 years down the road, look, we have this game scheduled for November of 2017, the biggest market. We're putting Ohio State into the biggest television sports media market in the country. You've got to believe a Chrysler or a Ford or a GM with an unlimited budget is not going to be saying, well, you know, Rutgers isn't going to be that good a team then. Rutgers is never a good team. We're going to lose all our eyeballs that are watching this after the first 15 minutes after Ohio State is up 21-3. And that's if Rutgers is lucky. So everything is dollar-driven these days. As a friend of mine says, it's all about the Benjamins, and we're just rooting for the laundry. Maybe that's the case in pro sports, but when you talk about advertising revenues, when you talk about all of the revenue streams that the conferences are looking for, teams get in and out of conferences because of the money they can generate. look, we've been kicked out of far better places than the Big East.
Well, you know, when you talk about the regionalization and so forth, that was the beauty of the Big East. And it's a shame that in the 80s it was really big. You had Pittsburgh, Syracuse, BC, then Connecticut was let in. You had Temple for a while, and Miami was in strong program, Virginia Tech. I mean, these were big schools. The thing that hurt the Big East, they first asked Penn State to join. They turned them down. Then they asked Notre Dame. They turned them down. They needed one more marquee school, and that Big East conference would still be there. But they didn't have the big draw, other than Miami, which was a big money school because they were winning. But there was no if they could have gotten both Penn State and Notre Dame to join the Big East, it'd be the strongest conference in the country.
Oh, it would really have made a
difference. It'd still be around. It'd be the strongest in the country from Boston out to South Bend and down to Florida. That whole eastern quarter of the country.
You know, the only place you're wrong on that, Notre Dame has a following all over the country. And certainly in the Midwest. No, I mean this.
To some degree.
No. In the Midwest, I'm telling you, everyone who didn't go to college, certainly if they were Catholic, but even people who were not, Notre Dame was their team because sometimes it was a state school, but more often, I'm telling you, when I grew up, other than University of Wisconsin, there were more Notre Dame fans than anyone. And that was always our second team. If Wisconsin wasn't playing, we were watching Notre Dame. I don't know, maybe
no,
not
it has
East,
a wonderful tradition.
It does indeed. And
you know,
remember something, you've got everything from the tradition, the fact that Notre Dame's been playing football since before 1900.
But so is Rutgers.
Pardon me?
Yes, yeah, and that's the point.
Rutgers,
You've got, how about Fordham? You know, the seven blocks of granite and all that stuff. You've got a lot of schools that have wonderful tradition, but somehow ND has managed to parlay that into a national following.
But I think in part because people who
movies and things like that. You've got the famous touchdown Jesus, all that other stuff.
But you
people love stuff like that.
I don't think that people here maybe can understand how important it was for people who never went to college to have a team. And Notre Dame was that team. And I said, certainly among Catholics, but I think it wasn't just Catholics.
Well, that was before the rise of pro football. Remember, college football was the thing until Pete Rozelle hit the NFL and the media.
See, now I have to disagree to that because as a kid...
back in the Midwest, 40s, 50s, 60s, there was still a lot of college football, and Notre Dame was winning championships.
Yeah, but also pro football, at least in the Midwest, was big. You talk about, Chicago Bear fans, Wisconsin.
I think it was bigger than baseball.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. And remember why? Because they only played 11
else
or 12
to do.
Games.
There was nothing else to do in the Midwest, even now.
And they only played a handful of games. They played in all played in the same conference, and it was always a 2-hour drive. I mean, if you wanted to see, remember the Packers would play in Milwaukee. From Milwaukee to Chicago is 2 hours, right?
The old days was a little bit more.
Okay, but you get my point. But
they played most of their games in Green Bay.
That's true. So maybe it was a 6-hour ride. Yeah. You would get up at 4 a.m., you would drive, you would tailgate, you would get there, and you would have, cook your bratwurst or whatever, have a couple of drinks, watch the game.
A couple? You never went to a Packer game.
Oh, I've been to
the
Packer
game.
Let me tell you something. If they ever had an Olympics of drinking, I will tell you, that the Green Bay Packer fans in the Packer parking lot outside of Lambeau would at least get a silver Olympic medal. Now, maybe Manchester United's fans would come away with the gold, but I saw people in that Green Bay parking lot that were absolutely legless. And John will tell you, we went with a friend of ours who's a native of Manchester in the United Kingdom. He loves his Red Devils, the Manchester United team. He said, I never saw people drunk to the point of being absolutely legless.
Well, guys, we have to say goodbye. It's 6 o'clock. They're going to cut us off.
Great show. Lots to talk about. And by this time next week, we'll have a lot of these questions answered.
We sure will. We'll have the World Series.
Enjoy the weekend. Happy Halloween. Happy Halloween to all our pumpkin followers out there.
And remember, folks, when you're trick-or-treating, it's a good reason to get up off that couch.